thank you, Karen. I'm truly delighted this evening to be in your midst and to share with you a topic that I have spent quite a bit of time preparing. But a lot of the materials that I'll be sharing with you are sort of new to me. It's for the first time presenting, so there will be some hiccups, and I probably will not be able to manage time all that well. So hopefully the most important material gets communicated, and if I should run out of time, well, I run out of time. Today, the talk that I've been giving, the topic is called the Making the Most of the High School Years. Now, there are so many ways of approaching this topic. There's so many different angles that you can approach the topic. And when I started preparing and thinking about a teenager, the life of a teenager, where the teenager is in his life cycle, and the challenges that he or she faces, if there's one word that I can describe that young life, it's the word transition. They're just going through transitions, rapid transitions. Now, your son and daughter, probably 13, 14, 15-year-old, right? Just gone through puberty. They just woke up from being a little kid to realizing that I'm a young woman, I'm a young man. And just left elementary school behind, now they're in junior high. And perhaps in just a year or two, they're in senior high. And you blink your eye a couple more times, they're in university. And a few more years, they'll finish with college or university, they'll be in the world of work. Transitions, transitions, transitions. And I haven't even mentioned just all the psychological changes occurring within that person. All the whole world of the friendship circles. Before, all of his friends were sons and daughters of mummy's friends, right? They really had no choice. Or they're friends from church. They're friends from school. They're from the neighborhood. But soon, or perhaps even now, as they're in junior high and in high school, they will start to have larger and larger concentric circles of friends. This friendship network begins to widen. And perhaps in widening that network will come a person who will ultimately be his spouse for the rest of his or her life. Now, it's amazing, all these changes that are taking place in a very compact 10 years or so. So, I've chosen to speak on the topic of career and life planning. In Chinese, I found out that there is a whole body of literature, especially in Hong Kong, especially in Taiwan, not so much in mainland China, because China is still very much had just emerged from a government-controlled economy to a free enterprise. And still, to a certain extent, young people are somewhat restricted in their career and life choices. But in Taiwan and in Hong Kong, you find that the schools are very much caught up in this concept called 生涯规划, is career and life planning. Now, this is very different from when I was in school. We certainly had something else we call vocational guidance. There would be perhaps agencies, even in school, there may be teachers who will help with vocational guidance or career development. How to find the job, what kind of jobs are available, and what would be the majors that if you would pick up these majors in university, then what kinds of options, career options are available to you. Basically, just looking at from school to work, that tight transition. Yes, that's important. But the concept of career and life planning, or 生涯规划, is a lot broader. It's talking about developing of the whole life, developing the life, developing a person from the point of view of someone who is just going through various phases. And life, as we all know it, is really one integrated experience, right? Yes, we go through certain phases, but it's still the same life. And the transition, the smoothness of that transition really matters. Some have described the schooling experience as the 15,000-hour experience. There was a book entitled 15,000 Hours. The book really describes from kindergarten to end of grade 12. It's about 15,000 hours experience. And some may say, well, but my child is not going to end at grade 12. He's going to go to college or university. So that'd be a few more hours at it. So if we were to include the expanded schooling experience, we're still talking about 20,000 hours experience. But do you know once they finish with school and they start working, do you know what kind of experience they'll move to? Well, they call it the 80,000 hour experience. It's the work life. Okay, so I think that today, what I want to do is to perhaps get all of us to think a little bit about what it is like to one day finish school and be in the workplace, even though it takes up 80,000 hours of an average person's life. The majority of people do not really have adequate guidance on how to move from this one stage, from this schooling experience, to a work experience. Now, I just want you to empathize with your children a little bit. That's what I want you to do now, is you close your eyes. Just close your eyes and imagine. Imagine you're behind the steering wheel of a car, and you're traveling down a road. Now, think back to the days when you were your child's age. Think back to when you were 13 or 14 or 15. What does the road ahead look like? What does it look like? Well, you might say, well, at 13, 14, I wasn't driving. Beside the point. But what does the road look like? Now, you can open your eyes. Would you see a road ahead of you? Well, it doesn't come through too well, so I need someone to perhaps in places where I need the visual to be really sharp to turn off. Do you see this? They say life is a journey. Do you see? What would your child's view of his future be like? What would your daughter's view of her future be like? Does she see a road straight ahead? Or is her view of the road like this? Still traveling down, but yet you see, there are choices, there are options, there may be corners to turn, to negotiate. Or is it like this? Well, it's a straight road. But there are lots of options, but I know, but forget about the options. I'm destined to go travel on this road because I will not consider any other road. This is the road. I know there are many options, but this is the road I want to travel on. Or could it be this? I don't know. I don't know which road I should travel. I don't even know. I can't even make out. I can't even understand why there are so many options. Okay, we can turn back on now. Four views
Perhaps there are others. I was trying to find pictures that perhaps will have, you know, like the sun will be shining, there'll be birds and flowers and so on and so forth. And then there may be, you know, you have all these other conditions associated with the view. I remember when I was 13 years old, or 14, and I had just finished writing a very tough and scary grade 6 public exam. In those years, writing a public exam was a lot of pressure for all these 12-year-olds. And if we didn't succeed, we wouldn't be, if we didn't do well, then we would be going to lesser schools, and mom wouldn't be happy, dad wouldn't be happy. It seems like the whole future is tied up to writing, doing well on this exam. And now that, you know, I'm in, say, Form 2 or Form 3, that would be the equivalent of Grade 8 or Grade 9, soon the university, the college, the school was going to put us into either one of two streams, science stream or the arts stream. And before you know it, the day is upon us. And making that decision is so tough because it's sort of, once you've chosen to go one way, then you say goodbye to all these careers and so on. Thank goodness in Canada we don't do it that early. Thank goodness our children have a little bit more time to think about the direction that they would like to travel down. But I think as parents, what can we do to help them? What can we do to help our children figure all of this out? They got to figure it out. So we got to help them. I think of one analogy. I'm the father of two sons. They're 33 and 30 now. I remember when they were young, I would walk, you know, down the street with them. I would hold the hand, and then they would always say, "Mama, carry me, carry me." Maybe they get tired. So I said, "Okay, I'll carry you a little bit." Then I got tired. I put them down. They always want me to pick them up. At first I thought, no, I can't do that because you're lazy. You don't want to walk. And you're putting burden on me. You know, you want to be carried. I want to be carried too. Then I realized that there was another reason. It wasn't just because they were getting tired and they wanted to be carried. There was another reason. Because as little people, especially going down on busy sidewalks, do you know what they see? They don't get to see anything. They only see people with bumps. They can't see anything. And so when I pick them up, they enjoy it because they enjoy the view. Because they can see as much as daddy can see. And there was one time, just for fun, I put him on my shoulders. When I put him on my shoulders, first it was a little scary idea, but soon he liked it. Because he now can see farther than his father. He can see more. Now I really appreciate the song, "You Raise Me Up." Remember that song? I know that that's probably many people's favorite. When Josh Groban sings and how when you put me on your shoulder, I mean, our children need to be on our shoulders. So as parents, what can we do to help them? The role of the parent is to raise them up. It's literally to raise them up. When we put them on our shoulders, when they can see far, then they have vision, then they have perspective, then they can see clearer. As little people, without our help, they can't see far. A lot of times, parents complain and say, "Well, if only my son could see, or my daughter can see farther afield and see the options, to see the pressure points, to see the decision points, to see, you know, the urgency. And I'm still just buried in computer gaming and all these things. I wish they would wake up. It's not a matter of waking up. It's a matter of they're lacking the perspective because they're little people. And as little people, all they see would be people's bumps unless we pick them up, until we raise them up. So as parents, what do we do to help them? The way to help them is to provide them with a perspective. And first, as parents, we need to have good perspectives. We can't always go down to the level of our child, and still, if we do that, we see bumps too.
All right. Now, I'm reminded of Donald Super. Now, his name is Super. It's true. Donald Super is one of the biggest names in the field of career development. And Super had a theory, and his theory goes something like this. He puts, well, the human life in various stages. There is the growth stage. I hope you appreciate the bilingual PowerPoint. I try to make sure but in so doing, the frame is often very, you know, crowded. And then there is the exploration stage from about age 15 to about 24. Okay, I put this in purple because that's the stage our children are in. And after that stage, there is an establishment stage, and then after that, a maintenance stage, and then there's a decline stage that I'm in. Okay. All right, so that's Super's. And then he had, you know, some of you might remember in your university days, and you might have learned this. And this was his rainbow, the life rainbow, of going through the various stages. Okay. Now, in China, the Chinese have this idea also, that there are various stages, and it is important to have life and career planning. Even Confucius himself had this to say. 孔子说什么?三十而立。Now, let me try to translate this into English. No, I shouldn't be the one doing it. There was a missionary who once translated this beautiful translation, a missionary by the name of Lady. John Leahy translated this. He said, at 30, I stood firm. Now, Confucius didn't say anything before age 30. But at 30, he was firm. But before 30, he was not firm, right? And then at 40, I had no doubts. At 50, I know the decrees from heaven. At 60, my ear was an obedient organ for the reception of truth. And at 70, I could follow what my heart desired without transgressing what was right. And that's 孔子的生涯规划. I thought it's beautiful. So is the concept shouldn't be strange to the Chinese mind. Now, when I looked into the literature on this 生涯规划, I learned a lot. And I think it's great that in summary, I have a few frames that will perhaps give you a flavor of what young people in Taiwan and in Hong Kong would learn from their guidance counselors, okay, about 生涯规划. It's a plan that is the result of what? It's a result of personal inventories. That is, a young person is encouraged to consider, to understand, to have a good understanding of himself or herself, all the opportunities that are available to him or her, the restrictions or the limitations, and also the choices and the consequences of those choices. So it is the role to enlighten the child, to get to know himself a little bit more. And then it is also the result of, as a result, the of goals and aspirations. Person begins to formulate goals and aspirations and a certain life direction.
and then formulating concrete plans. And the plans may include near goals, intermediate goals, and also far-ranging, far-distant goals. And so it's self-expectations, it's getting to know oneself to the point that I can expect, I know what to expect because I now know myself, together with confidence and follow through action, then the career and life planning gets done. Well, they have these fancy diagrams that I won't go into now. I think I'm going to be challenged for time. But basically, it's looking at personal variables, looking at situational variables, and then looking at the marketplace, the society at large, the reality, and then making decisions to formulate a career and life plan. I won't go into this. Okay. Well, it is the perspective to live life on one's own terms. Young people are encouraged to make career and life plans because one wants to live one's life consistent with one's values and life goals. It is a way, by planning this, it is a way of affirming oneself. It is also a way of exploring oneself and also the world around it. Objective is doing one's own things and liking it, living one's own life and enjoying it, taking control of one's life. The process is first a self-assessment, and then through exploration, place yourself in a role or in a life station that you're comfortable with. Well, what's the value of having this career and life plan? Formulation of goals that bring greater focus on one's life purpose. Those of you who have read Purpose-Driven Life ask, of course, we all need to ask the question, what on earth am I doing in this world? For what purpose? What is my life purpose? And it's encouraging our young people, raising them up to a point where they have a distant perspective, seeing their life purpose. Now, what is the reverse of that? I think by seeing this frame, you'll see that without a career or life plan, what might happen? People might end up with the following consequences. One, laissez-faire. Whatever happens, happens. Some people end up doing work for the rest of their life, not because of choice, but because of whatever happens. Did that happen to you? Do you want this to happen to your child? Of course we don't. Laissez-faire. Well, some people end up doing their life's work because of something that is trendy. Now everyone trades stock online. Day trading. You can make lots of money day trading. Well, a lot of people rush into that and lose their shirt, I suppose, many of them. Including young people. About 15 years ago, Internet gambling, this Texas Hold'em, which is a card game, a poker game, caught many university students by storm. Many young people really got caught up in this,
My son in university knew a roommate, had a roommate, who was so good in this online poker gaming that he wanted to be a commentator for a radio, for a TV station. He was good at it, and because he was very articulate, and he wanted to change. I don't know whatever happened to him, but that was something that trendy that came along, and he ended up going that way. And then there's lease work. Some people end up doing something because, well, it required the least amount of preparation. It could be, show me the money. Where is the jobs that bring the best, the most money? That's where they'll go. Or stereotypes. Well, you're a female, you're quiet, you don't like to socialize, you like to, you know, well, being a teacher would be ideal for you. Sometimes with those kinds of stereotypes, of course, that would be a wrong stereotype. Today's teachers cannot be quiet stay-at-home types, right? It looks good. Well, sometimes you ask, well, why do you do what you do? Well, I think it looks good. I like dressing up. I like looking good. And going to this office and, you know, I look good. So I like it. Well, I'll let my mom decide for me. Or I'll let whoever might, yeah. Without the child actively engaged in career and life planning, this would be the consequence. Okay. Now let's debunk four myths. Today I hear a lot of people mention these things, and in fact, these four, I didn't make up this list. This came out in a magazine called Business World. You can be anybody if only you make your mind up. If only you can make your mind up. Okay. You can be anybody. Is it true? Well, not really. Not really. It sounds good. It sounds very American. Sounds like it comes from Donald Trump. But it's not really true. There's another one. You can accomplish anything with hard work and determination. It's, there's a grain of truth to it, or even, but not really. Not anything. Many things, but not anything. Follow your passion, success will follow. And that's not necessarily true either. Don't mind how others view you. Just in the internet age, certainly not true. Before you go for your interview, you can expect your prospective employer to have sought you out in the internet and try to follow you, try to see you, and try to, you know, other people opinion about you do matter. Okay. From Business Insider, half truth. Okay. Now, we just looked at a body of literature about career and life planning. We realized that this is important. We got a gist of it. It is still at a very intellectual level. It is still at a, you know, it's theoretical. What does it mean to me? What does it mean to me? Well, before I get on to the really meaningful stuff, I want to introduce more theoretical things to you. Okay. There is another relatively new idea that I think you, as parents, need to be aware of. And it is something that I didn't learn in school because all these developments occur after. It's fairly recently. In 2007, David Brooks, who has a column in New York Times, wrote about the various stages in life. 人生的大时代啊, big stages. He said, in the past, there were only three stages. In the 19th century, or before. So for thousands of years, for a couple thousand, several thousand years, humans had went through three stages. The childhood stage, and when they're no longer a child, they're an adult. It doesn't matter if the child is 8 or 9, but once the child ceases to be a child, he is considered an adult. He would do the work of an adult and lead the life of an adult. And when does that stage end? Until that person could no longer work. So life, only three stages. You were a kid, you needed to be taken care of, then you're on your own, and then you can no longer be on your own, you're old. Okay. Then came along the Industrial Revolution, and then another stage, a fourth stage, got added. And that was the adolescence stage. People began to realize that, well, after a kid had become a kid, there is a little transition. We're in school. Kids need knowledge. Kids need skills. And they need to go to school. They need to get more education. Therefore, there is an adolescent stage. Then, beginning in the 60s or the 70s, people began to take early retirement. I think that was when London Life came out with Freedom 55 or something like that, right? Then you have people who realize that the human existence is not just about work. There has to be some enjoyment as well, especially in the West. And people begin to realize that, you know, if I can retire early, then I would. And then there is this, active retirement. David Brooks said, most recently, there is yet another stage. It's called the Odyssey years. Now, I don't know how to translate it. These will be my translations, okay? It's 左顾右盼啊，迷茫，就是 Odyssey, wandering years. Okay. Now, some statistics. In 1960, roughly 70% of 30-year-olds had achieved the following already. They had moved away from home, they become financially independent, they got married, and they started a family. Okay. 70% of people got all of these things crossed off. Year 2000, fewer than 40% of 30-year-olds had done the same. Economic reasons. Why? Well, rising costs of university education, higher housing costs, higher unemployment means delayed adulthood. There are social reasons. The old success recipes don't apply anymore. New norms have not been established. There's great fluidity. Dating gives way to Facebook and hooking up. Marriage gives way to cohabitation. Church attendance gives way to spiritual longing. Newspaper reading gives way to blogging. Gender roles have reversed. Stay-home moms give way to stay-home dads. All these changes delayed adulthood. And now there is a phenomenon. This is a fairly recent phenomenon. The boomerang kids. Well, you know the boomerang. You throw it out, and it comes back. Your kids graduate from university. Goodbye. They found a job. You're so happy. You downsized. You sold your home. And a couple of years later, someone knocked on your doors. Okay, suitcase in hand, a boomerang kid. Well, China also has this phenomenon now, Kanlao Zhu. And then when I was preparing for this talk, I found out, well, it's also the Neats. England had, the Brits had the Neats. And these are 16 to 18 year olds, not in education, not in employment, not in training. So they're not in education, not in employment, not in training, the Neats. These are recent phenomena. Now, I also want to introduce another piece for you, for food for thought for you. File away this name, Tony Wagner, okay? So online, you can go into the internet, you can search for Tony Wagner. He's a professor on technology and entrepreneurship at Harvard. And he was the one who came out with the concept, the NF is the new way. Okay. Allow our kids to fail. He said, please allow our kids to fail. That's his mantra. And I will just very quickly talk about his ideas. And I think these ideas are really relevant. I want you to file them away. And then later when we try to draw all these implications together, then you know why I'm recommending these things. Okay. What Tony Wagner said, several things. Number one is we celebrate individual achievements at the expense of innovation. He said, now remember, the world has changed. We're facing a very different world. What the world needs would be innovators. We want creative people going forward. The most highly paid jobs are going to be those requiring creativity and innovation. So we need to educate the next generation of people to be innovators. He said, look at our school system today, and you'll find that the school is not doing that because we celebrate individual achievement at the expense of innovation. Schooling is very individualistic. A mark is given to you, and you get a report card, and that report card belongs to you. But in an innovative environment, the mark would not be given just to you. It would be given to a team. It would be given to a lab. It would be given to a core group, or a team, a work team. Number two, he said the world of innovation is interdisciplinary and problem-based learning. Problems can no longer be solved and understood within the bright lines of academic disciplines. He said that universities should not have very clear lines of demarcation of departments, chemistry department, biology department, etc. But they should be more interdisciplinary because the problems the world face today are very complex. They're so complex that not any one discipline is going to be able to solve, to find solutions to the problems that we face. We would need the various disciplines to work together. And I can give you an example. AIDS is not just a medical issue. It's a pharmaceutical issue. It's a treatment issue. It's a lifestyle issue. Right? It has economic implications. It has social policy implications. So we, in order to tackle a problem as big as, say, AIDS, we need many branches of science, many branches of discipline to work together. The culture of school is all about risk aversion. Innovation is all about risk and taking them. Fail early and fail often because there is no innovation without trial and error. Replace failure with iterations. So we should allow our kids to fail. How many of you, like me, learn more from your mistakes than from your successes? He asked. Don't shield our children from making mistakes when they're young. Mistakes hurt a lot more when they are 35. Real confidence is learning that you can recover from mistakes. Okay. That's why I'm very passionate about talking about developing a culture at home that allows a child to fail. We rely on extrinsic rewards. High marks and high and money for good grades. Okay. Chinese parents. Okay. Innovators tend to be intrinsically motivated, making a difference in the world. Innovators, the successful people in the future, are the ones that need to be intrinsically motivated. They're motivated not because by money, not by high marks, not by praises, but by something that is deep inside of them. And so Tony Wagner, if you go to the internet and search him and look at what he's talking about, he gave three words: play, passion, and purpose. And now I'm going to bring it home and talk about what it means to us as parents, the implications for us in the area of play, passion, and purpose. Actually, when I stop and start to wonder, I remember when John F. Kennedy had his most famous quote. You all remember that quote. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. What he was trying to do at the time was to stir amongst the young people in the 1960s, United States, when the U.S. was just becoming very affluent and very prosperous. And people, the young people who were brought up at the time, their parents had gone through a very long, severe economic depression. And their parents saved everything and worked very hard and didn't want their children to experience the hardship that they had just came out of. And so there was a sense of entitlement with young people in the 60s. John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I think what he was trying to do was to instill a sense of purpose. He was trying to instill a sense of higher calling of the young people. He was the one who established the Peace Corps and sent the young people to do development work in third world countries. Of course, there were political reasons for doing that. But one of the things that he wanted to do was to raise that generation up on his shoulder so they could see wider, so they could see farther, and not just see and look at pay, high grade, and so on, but to look farther. Now, coming back to us parents, I'm sorry I chose a female face, but I think dads are just as well. We're anxiety driven because we had come out from, some of us anyway, difficult upbringing, right? Very competitive wherever country that you had come from. It was far more competitive there. Lots of people competing for rare resources. And then we heard things like, no child left behind, don't get behind, don't get left behind. So, ready, set, go, run. Get high marks, do well in school. So we're brought up in this culture. Now, but in the context of what we had talked about, I devised a talk. And I'm going to share a few frames from this. This is one of my presentations, The Importance of Free Play. And that's the first word of Tony Wagner. Play. We need to allow our young people to play. Okay, the young people say amen. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We need to encourage our young people to play. Not just study, but play. Play. But what kind of play? Well, first, very quickly, why? Why do we want them to play? Free play. Well, it's because it develops manual dexterity. Young kids, let them play. Let them go to the backyard. Let them jump around and let them whatever. Okay, play. There's a social reason, because they learn self-efficacy skills. When you're playing with same age or other children, then you devise your rules, and there are ways of relating and solving problems and so on. Okay? So a lot of social skills are being built up. Intellectually, well, if you allow a child, especially with certain kinds of games, educationally rich games, maybe Lego, right, then room for much imagination. Kids are allowed to create. And then there's the mental, too, because when there are certain games and so on that promote healthy brain development. All right. But today, unfortunately, what we have is not free play, but passive entertainment. When you think, like watching TV, like even listening to it in the, you know, the concert, or put computer gaming and so on, it's very passive. You're sitting still while listening or watching, and there is relatively little direct involvement. But contrast this to active, engaged free play, then like ball sports or aquatic sports or cycling and so on, you're engaged, you're active, you're fully physically engaged, and you take full control of your level of participation. You can disengage when you want to, or when you wish to, when you get tired, etc. But you're engaged when you participate, you're engaged. Now, if we do not engage in an active lifestyle, be actively participating, then these are the consequences. We get used to passivity and inaction, and then it discourages taking initiatives and leadership, it stifles creativity, and there's little room for interpersonal interaction and group skills, obesity, and addiction. All of these may be the end result of lacking free play. But when we free play, who do we play with? Well, sometimes you can play with adults. But when you play with adults, like this kid is, learning to play golf, maybe with father or grandfather, you acquiesce to adult rules. Because the adults are the ones who make up the rules. You end up playing by their rules. Sacrifices creativity, leadership, and group skills. That would be the disadvantage. When you play with same-age kids, what's the advantage? The advantage would be that you practice decision-making skills, you move at your own pace, and you discover your own areas of interest. Like, I show a picture of, you know, on a sandy beach, kids can just do whatever they want to get dirty. Okay. Realistically, we need both. We need our kids to be able to do both, to play with adults and also to play with fellow children. And as parents, we can observe to see the interaction, to see actually their growth socially and intellectually, physically, and so on. Play is important, but what is the number one obstacle to our kids engaged in play? It's a hurried lifestyle. Today's parents make the mistake of over-scheduling. I sincerely think that. We over-schedule. We don't allow our kids to have any downtime. You can see this mother. Okay, dragging the daughter away, perhaps to, I don't know, a violin lesson or to floor hockey or Kumon math or chess game or what? Well, this kid, you can see, wide-eyed. Where am I going, Mom? Okay. Highly scheduled children may appear to thrive. But we end up paying a very heavy price. The number one price we pay is what? I'm sorry, I didn't translate that into English. Is to have big tension and pressure between the parent and the child. So many homes today, I know, parent-child tension, argument, is always over what? Practicing on the piano. Right, playing games too much, or just marks, low marks, unsatisfactory schoolwork, etc. Earlier, Mrs. Wang was saying that this communication, there is a barrier, generation gap in our homes. And indeed, young people, once they hit puberty and all, they seem to want to, you know, they don't talk as much as before. It's like they have a zipper, you know, they start to tighten up. But I was reminded that when is the prime time for the family, for you and your kids, to communicate? When is the best time? I think the best time is when we're down. It's during downtime, not when we're scheduled. It's when we're down, we don't have anything scheduled. That's when we communicate the best. Looking back, we made the mistakes too. Maisie and I, my wife and I, made the mistake. We overscheduled our kids. We had a very hurried lifestyle as well. Looking back, what a mistake. So my advice to you today, don't make the same mistake. Don't overschedule. Often I recall, and it's just so vivid, so many times when we wanted to talk, but we ran out of time. We ended up saying, let's get into the car and talk. Does that happen in your family, with your family? Yeah. Okay? We don't have time now. But, you know, we have half an hour to drive to church, so that half hour should be enough for us to talk. Usually when we talk like that, it's not really sharing things that are important. Usually it's about urgent things. Okay? Who's going to take grandma to them? You know, it's all these urgent matters. I was reminded of the Chinese, 闲话家常. When do we share? It's when we're leisurely. When we talk about not really important, urgent matters. That's when we have time to talk about our inner feelings. When we cook together. When we do a hobby together. When we're all immersed in playing a game together. And that's prime time for family communication. And secondly, it pays a happy first. We talked about this already. And there's a second price we pay. And that is, it brings on many adolescent depression. Depression is on the rise. And I have statistics to prove it. Okay. And then thirdly, I think this is really crucial. As an educator, this is what I least like to see. When we parents take the initiative, and we overschedule, and we bring our kids and, you know, to piano lesson this minute and Kumon this, and then we gotta go to, you know, dance lessons, and then we do this and that. Then the child is being led by the nose like an oxen, right? Led by the nose to this place and to that place and so on. And soon the learner loses initiative. And then we're cultivating a whole generation of unhappy kids who are passionless, kids who don't have interest. It's a book by Sean Acker, wonderful book. His book is called The Happiness Advantage. I encourage you to, those of you who would like to read, but in a crux, what he said is this. A lot of times, our parents, usually, what's the logic we use with our children? You need to study hard. My children said, why? Because if you work hard, then you go to a good school. And then, if you go to a good school,
you get a good major, you get a good profession, you get a good job. And then, when you get a good job and be successful, you'll be happy. Right? That's our logic. Now, so the conventional wisdom is successful, only successful people are happy. Therefore, you need to be successful. Therefore, you need to work hard. But what Sean Acker found is, no. It's happy people are the ones who are successful. If you're happy, then when you do something, you do it with gusto. When you're happy and excited, you do it with passion, with enthusiasm. You do better. It says the logic is opposite. Okay? I thought it's pretty good what he said. Yeah. And then, fourthly, there are also many bad things that can come about pertaining to our child as a learner. They become overly self-critical. They become perfectionistic. Those who do not do well in school even avoid school. They skip school. Cheating is a big problem in university these days. Bring about other somatic symptoms. So, highly scheduled children may appear to thrive, but we end up paying a very heavy price. Einstein has this to say, I'm neither clever nor especially gifted. I'm only very, very curious. Overscheduling chases away any curiosity on the part of our child. It's okay. So it is important for us to help our children develop hobbies and interests. First of all, a question. What's the difference between hobbies and interests? What's the difference? My answer is very simple. One costs money and one doesn't. Interest don't cost anything, but hobbies usually cost money. Now, but why is it important? Why do we put in hobbies and interests on resumes? We put them on resumes, and when I pick up someone's resume, when there is that, I always look for that. Look for that section where I can find out that person's hobbies and interests. Why? Because it is a little window to the person's soul. Everything else are just formal business talk. Where did he go to school? What previous jobs he had held? All of those things. But hobbies and interests allow me to have a glimpse of the person's soul. What is this person? In raising children, I think it is important for our children to develop interests and hobbies. Hobbies is a point of connection with people. It adds confidence. It reduces stress. It makes one more interesting. It makes one useful. Okay. All right. I'm going to skip this. It's got a little pressure of time. This one, very simple. Passion missing. Remember the three words, play, passion, and purpose. Play we talked about. We need to allow our kids to have more free play. And the purpose of free play is to allow the child to what? To have interests and hobbies. To develop interests and hobbies. Interests and hobbies are usually acquired when the child is not actively looking for something that it would interest him. We find something, we stumble onto hobbies and interests often. We see something, we say, oh, that's interesting. And because we find something interesting, we explore. We find rich
spend more time. And that's how interest, think of the interest that you have. Think of the hobbies that you do. They're not acquired in a classroom. They are caught out of thin air. You see something that's interesting, and you invest the time and the attention. In a hurried lifestyle, if our children are led by the nose, they will not have time to notice anything else. They will not have the time to find out what they may find interesting, because they don't even have that mindset to find things that are interesting. Here, there is a saying, energy flows where attention goes. It's when you start focusing on something, you see, this is interesting. And I spend time looking at it, I become involved in it, I pay attention to it, and that's when passion comes. Now, when I was thinking about this, the next thing was really good. I tried to look up what the word passion means. It comes from the Greek entheos. Okay? And what it means is that it is stirred by God. It is something that is stirred by God. So it is when God encourages us and stirs us, then we can become passionate. Okay. A life of high purpose is a noble calling. When I think of play and I think of passion, then I can connect to purpose. Because when I understand, then passion is something that God can stir in our heart. The role of faith. To our young people, this is important. They need to have faith in their life. It is tough for me to imagine anyone to be truly successful without faith in one's life. The reason? Faith gives us a sense of direction. It gives us a sense of purpose. It gives us a purpose of doing what we do. There are people who do not have very clear faith direction. And what I end up doing is that they get passionate and excited about something, and then they go and work hard and achieve it, and afterwards, what they do? They say, well, so what? I got it. Been there, done that. So, what else? I have, in my lifetime, come across several people who are like that. Highly successful people, but couldn't sustain the success because they were so passionate. The passion was not there to sustain that person.
Faith is important for success because it allows us, it gives what we do a sense of purpose. Now, we need to give our young people this reminder. Yes, the future road, I don't know, it could be crooked still. It may be confusing. But Jesus promises to walk and travel down this road with us. And that's a great, great comforting thought. Our young people need to be encouraged. They need hope for the future. And I've been an educator for 40 years. And I'll tell you, today I truly understand what education means. 90% of education is really encouragement. 90% of education is encouragement. And parenting, a high percentage of what the parenting role is encouraging. You encourage. We keep encouraging. Keep encouraging. You cannot go wrong. Keep encouraging. Our young people need to have hope. Even though the world before them, the roads before them, tend to be confusing and so on, they need hope. finally, to conclude, I have my eight, these are my eight advice to young people. My advice to young people, and so the audience will be now, we're focused on the young people. And perhaps if you can, if you agree with these advice, that perhaps you can also advise your children similarly. Number one, take full responsibility of your career. Don't rely on others to make the decision for you. You have to make the decision yourself. Now remember, going back to Sang Ya Kui Hua, I think a big thing that I got from that body of literature is it's important to allow our children, to encourage them to think through these, because it is a life that they have to live for themselves. Number one. Number two, carve out time. Take time. Do a skill assessment. Evaluate your leadership qualities. Get to know your strengths. There are all kinds of online self-assessment tools that are free. They don't cost anything. Some of them are not too scientific, but doesn't matter. Try them. At least these tools represent what some people consider are different facets that one should pay attention to in self-discovery. Number three, examine your core values. Know your core values. Think of what you deeply care. Number four, seek God's will. God loves you and has a wonderful plan for you. Every young people should remember this. The best advice as Christian parents to our kids is not to ask our kids to live a life that we want to meet our requirement and to fulfill our dreams, but to encourage a child to walk, to find God's will in his life and become the person God intends him to be. And when he does that, then he fulfills the very purpose of the creation, why he was created on earth for. So this is a very important reminder to parents, that kids are really seeds that God has given us. And because they are seeds, we need to grow them. We grow them God's way. And you grow them and turn them into what they're designed to be in the first place. If these are pumpkin seeds, we need to turn them into pumpkins. Right? God has already instilled or buried very important qualities in that seed. That DNA is already in there. And we as parents, like farmers, need to bring that seed into fruition. That's number four. Five, cultivate lasting friendships. Encourage our kids to cultivate lasting friendships. Encourage them to find a mentor. Find someone who can give them life direction. Perhaps the youth group leader at church. Perhaps there is an uncle. Perhaps there is a friend of a family who is a mature Christian who is also interested in investing in your child's life, in his future. Dissect your accomplishments and failures. That's Tony Wagner here. You make a mistake? Well, learn from your mistake. If you don't learn from your mistake, you made the mistake in vain. When you succeed, analyze it, dissect it, Why did you succeed? Okay. Encourage our kids to find the reasons why they succeed or they fail. Don't just, you know, like praise them or sometimes scold them, right? But encourage them to dissect their accomplishments and failures. Don't let things hold you back. Move on. I know that there are young people. Some of them very sensitive. They might have made a mistake. They might have wasted valuable time. They may have fumbled a ball. But whatever it is, don't let these things hold them back. Get back up and move on. And learn to be grateful. Okay. Finally, number 8. Try new things. Try new things. In education, what is education? Education is doing things that we didn't know how to do before. That's education. If we do the same things that we've already learned how to do, that's not education. That's just practicing. That's just doing the same thing over and over, right? Education is encouraging is the learner to take on new challenges, to do things that you never knew how to do. So that's why at home we need to have this ability to fail culture. It's okay to fail culture. All right, I think I've used up all my time. Now, I just delivered a talk, lasted a little over an hour. And I already knew in how I had spent the time that where I had fallen short, and I could have made certain things perhaps a little bit more practical. I know that there was a lot of information that sounds maybe very theoretical. But I hope you also appreciate that without those theoretical foundations, then the others, you see, I'm trying to hang my suggestions that are consistent with what I found to be trends and realities that we face in the modern world. Anyway, but we have time for questions so that we can perhaps elaborate and expound on some of these ideas that you might have heard and not understood or perhaps wanted some elaboration and so on.